Right, so thank you very much for the invitation to speak to you all today. The work I'm going to be sharing with you has been a culmination of work that we've been doing in JISC over the past 4 years, which has been exploring some of the concepts that we've heard mentioned today, particularly around design for learning. But for those of you who perhaps are not familiar with JISC, just a very brief introduction to who we are and what we do. We are funded by all the UK funding councils for further and higher education, and we work with colleges and universities to make better and more effective use of technologies. Within the e-learning program in which I work, we have quite an ambitious vision for the next 4 years, where we are hoping to achieve a more flexible learning environment for all our learners, wherever and however they study, in order to realise a vision where there is better and more effective uptake of technology, improving flexibility and creativity, and by encouraging sort of diverse, personal, high-quality learning, teaching and research. So we fund universities and colleges to explore these sorts of issues through innovation projects over a number of years. The context, I just thought it would be interesting to share with you a few quotes which relate to the student perspective in this argument. And within the work that we've been doing in our e-learning program, although a lot of the work is focused on the practitioner perspective and the institutional perspective, we do have a very large program of research focusing on the student experience and what their expectations are, because we firmly believe that when we are looking at designing more effective technologies and more effective systems and tools, we should very much be taking on board the expectations and listening to the students. So I have there just a few quotes which come out of the research that we have been gathering. And the majority of those quotes there are very much valuing still the face-to-face contact that students sometimes expect when they come into our institutions. So I think that's just a reality check for us, just to remind ourselves of engaging learners in the discussion and debate, and also the perspective of what students value from their learning experience. So if we look at the Design for Learning program, as I say, the program, the initial program started in 2005, and this was to explore how practitioners were designing learning activities. And we defined it as a set of practices carried out by learning professionals, and looking at the processes of designing, planning, and orchestrating learning activities, which involved the use of technology, as part of a learning session or a program. And the idea of design really did, at that stage, embrace new educational roles, new ways of guiding others to learn, and the need to represent and share educational ideas more explicitly, which I think something that sort of theme has been prevalent, I think, through this morning's presentations. And looking for design-based systems to support practice. So from the first phase of our research, we came up with some very interesting observations, and I think those, again, have sort of been echoed this morning. But one thing that was exposed through our initial evaluations of learning design tools with users is that there is a diversity of existing approaches to design. And when we did start speaking to practitioners, the ways in which practitioners plan and design their learning takes place in a variety of different ways and mechanisms, from, you know, the paper-based scrap of paper through to one example there of a structured PowerPoint presentation that was used for planning, through to a mind map, through to a Word document that in this case was a template from an institutional perspective where they were required to actually fill in a detailed template of a lesson plan, to a LAM sequence, and lastly that last example of XML. So for us in the program, it was quite a challenge therefore to try and sort of make sense of all of this. I'm just trying to return to my previous slide. So just bear with me a second. Just did it the wrong way. Education design tools are rarely experienced by practitioners as pedagogically neutral or flexible enough really to accommodate their existing practice. And there was a real need at that stage for tools that support more collaborative design and to be able to be responsive to the needs of their particular learners, and also for ways of more effective sharing of design processes and outcomes, bearing in mind that these conclusions were almost 3 years ago now. And practitioners did want to rich expressions of their pedagogical intentions. So in other words, they did want to be able to represent them graphically or in rich narratives, but they also wanted bite-sized curriculum elements that can easily be repurposed and reused. And lastly and importantly, they felt that design processes needed to be integrated with other processes and resources. And there, I think, if design practice is really to be transformed, it's the links in with the institutional processes and practices that are really key in supporting that. So at the end of phase one of our research, we, as I say, had a very complex picture that we were trying to address. And what we wanted to do was, look at putting together a program of research whereby we were funding trials of learning design tools in a number of different institutions, both in further and higher education sectors, and looking at how practitioners were engaging with those tools. So in 2006, we embarked on the second phase of research in the Design for Learning program. And the original definition that we had for design for learning was already starting to change and evolve, where we were talking about practices carried out by learning professionals. We were seeing progressive involvement of learners. And I think particularly in 2008, we are seeing sort of examples of learner-generated content. There is a lot of work in the UK around learner-generated context. And we are seeing the involvement of learners in the design process. In terms of planning, designing, planning, and orchestrating, we were also seeing the addition of structuring. And in terms of learning activities, we were recognising the need to focus wider and to recognise the importance of learning design in the process of planning sessions and courses and linking that very much to curriculum design. And the use of technology really was no longer an add-on. It was very much a part of what we were looking at practice as being. It's very much with the use of technology. And very much linking, as Grainne was recognising in her presentation, the importance of linking the learning design and the curriculum design with the actual delivery. So the programme aims were to explore the implementation of these tools, both in the pedagogical sense as well as in the technical sense, and look at the ways in which we could perhaps support a community of practice around sharing effective practice, effective pedagogical learning designs, and also exploring the use of models or exemplars. And look at the sustaining of that community of practice. We had and funded 11 projects which started in May of 2006 and finished earlier this year. And I have got the web links there for more information. So in terms of the programme, what were we actually funding? Well, we were funding the use and projects to explore the use of existing tools. In particular, the tools that predominated in the programme were those of LAMS and Moodle. But what we were able to look at was the use of those tools across a variety of different subject areas and in different contexts. There were some technical implementation projects that were looking at adding functionality to existing tools, and those included the use of LAMS and Reload. There was also an emphasis on building shareable outcomes of the design process. And there was some excellent work being done at Cambridge University looking at developing GLOWs or generative learning objects and looking at the whole process of supporting staff with the design aspects and being able to look at ways in which those designs can be shared. Obviously, recognising the work that had been funded previously by JISC and the work of the Dialogue Plus toolkit, but also looking at ways in which we could develop pedagogy planning tools further to support design at course and session level, and funding the two pedagogy planning projects. So we felt we did have quite a range of projects that were actually touching on all of those different elements there in the design cycle. So very briefly, because I know this is going to be the focus of tomorrow's discussions, but we did fund two pedagogy planning tools, which were, for us, proof of concepts, very much looking at the questions that we've been looking at this morning as to whether practitioners can take and be guided by a pedagogy planning tool, and whether there, you know, was the option of those tools being taken up and used effectively. We have got some excellent evaluation data from the pilot sessions that both planners have run, and there will be further information about that tomorrow. But it was also a very valuable opportunity for us to gather some requirements around what practitioners value in the sense of pedagogy planning tools or support, but equally exploring the huge technical and conceptual challenges that are in this field. And as we've heard, you know, every person, every practitioner has a different way of planning, has a different sort of need and a different expectation, really. And also it is getting over the barrier of practitioners saying, well, actually, yes, I could benefit from looking at another learning design or another case study that perhaps is not necessarily in my field of interest or relating to my academic subject, but it's more about the transferability elements of that case study or of that design. So it's really, for us, exposed a huge number of questions that we're still discussing and debating. But it was a very, very useful activity in terms of gaining a better understanding of the ways that practitioners plan and what they value in that planning process. Just very brief comparisons there of the two planners. And obviously their URLs are there for you to have a look at further. And I won't go through those in too much detail because we'll obviously be covering those tomorrow, but what we did uncover were the functional requirements for pedagogy planning tools, and what came out as some of the important points there that came out from our work in this area was customizability for different users and contexts. Obviously tying into the discussions around Web 2, social software and social networking, practitioners felt that, you know, to be able to customise something for their institution and their context was obviously of high value. Alternative forms of outputs according to the nature of tasks and users' personal preferences. As before, obviously there are practitioners who prefer to have visual representations rather than text and narrative. Looking at the planning tools, making explicit the underlying educational rationale for their design decisions, and the consequences of decisions in terms of how the design will be experienced by learners. As I say, the two elements of work that we are funding in this area have to come together, and there has to be some interplay between what we are gathering from our research on students' experiences of using technology and the way that technology is being presented to them, but equally from the practitioner view, how they perceive the technology being used to support those processes. Also looking at I think the most valuable things from pedagogy planning tools, most valuable to use, is when they make it possible to work collaboratively. And unfortunately, with the two systems that were created, the prototypes this stage, that collaborative element was missing. And I think that was one of the exciting opportunities for us, is perhaps work with Grania and Cloudworks to see how that could perhaps potentially inform that community of practice so that that sharing and discussion and collaboration around those designs could take place. And equally, you know, the link through to repositories of exemplary designs and resources and the context-relevant help and guidance. Now, I just wanted to try and pick out three projects that I thought would have particular relevance to this conference. And these are three projects that made use of LAMS. So the first project I'd just like to share with you is a project called ALID that was funded at Swansea College in Wales. So that was looking at an FE context of use of LAMS and the use of Moodle, which was the institutional's VLE. I think the exciting thing about the ALID project was the use of LAMS to support a range of different subject areas and a range of different levels within those subject areas, and the ways in which they were able to sort of gain buy-in really from those practitioners involved in those different different subject areas. They created a number, as in sort of some of the outcomes of the project, they created a number of exemplar designs, one of which I think has been used as an example within the LAMS community of practice. So one example here is the exemplar design from Your Amazing Brain, where the learning design introduces students to the workings of the brain and the things that students can do to improve their own learning. The learning designs incorporated two flash interactive games, as well as a SCORM-compliant learning object. And the aim of the learning object is to make students aware of the steps they can take to improve their own learning and concentration. So it was a particularly a nice example of seeing how they were able to link up the learning objects that they had in this area and then present them in the LAMS sequence to their students. And the key findings from the project and from the work that they were doing was that they were actively encouraged students to exhibit a record of thinking by sharing with their peers, as well as a prompt reflection about their learning. And particularly for some of the learners that were engaged on these particular courses, where they had groups of students ranging from the ages of 14 to 16, who came from quite disaffected backgrounds and were not necessarily having the learning skills and literacies that were required to enable them to do their studies. It was a way in which they felt they were able to engage these learners in terms of being active participants in the learning. And as you will see there, the practitioners were generally surprised at how well these students engaged. So I think that in particular is quite a very nice example of where they felt LAMS had great strengths and benefit of use. The second example is from the De Silla project, the University of Sheffield, and in particular they were looking at LAMS to answer the following question. To what extent does a learning design tool such as LAMS add value to the practice and impact of designing for inquiry-based learning and the dissemination of inquiry-based pedagogy? And the responses they had were mixed in this case. The institution was very wedded to its institutional VLE. And in this respect, this project had quite a lot of barriers to overcome in actually obtaining institutional support from the technical implementation of using LAMS. But they did feel it was LAMS was very useful in bringing the concept of design for learning at the fore of institutional individual levels and supporting practice of process-aware design for IBL. They experienced LAMS as relatively easy to use, and practitioners' attitude to reuse suggests they might be more open to reusing whole sequence LAMS-based activity designs when the content is perceived as generic and therefore also directly transferable. This project has produced some excellent case studies, very detailed case studies of use of LAMS in these different discipline areas. And the one that I was going to show you was the Designing for Staff Development using LAMS for Inquiry-Based Learning, as that was one of the sequences they developed to use in their staff development workshops for staff involved in this project. but those are all available on their website. So the findings were mixed. It was seen to provide well for the design of linear forms of inquiry-based learning, but it appeared considerably less well suited for the design of more flexible and open-ended forms of inquiry. The last project is the Elida Camel project, and here the project was looking to run and trial LAMS and Moodle and with limited use of Reload in both FE and HE contexts across quite a wide range of subject areas. And the premise of this project was very much around supporting practitioners with the design and the development of these sequences. They were very much basing it around a collaborative approach, and there was also a model called the CAMEL model within the partners of this project, whereby practitioners visited each other and were able to peer review the designs that were produced. And in this respect, some of sort of the key points there was that in this project, they felt practitioners benefit greatly from having that supportive environment of practice. Supportive critique, they felt, was valuable in actually encouraging practitioners with the development of their practice. Key there, I think, is saying that if we are expecting practitioners to engage in these discussions, support and sufficient resources allocated to practitioners or institutions is absolutely key in take-up of these sorts of developments. As practitioners became more confident in their practice with one another, and in the experience of sharing, critiquing one another's designs, the trends towards reusability of designs appear to increase markedly. So I thought, again, that was quite an interesting observation in which we were seeing where the difference of the supportive environment and social environment was actually encouraging practitioners then to have more trust and to actually then consider reuse of others' designs. And those last three points there really are quite key in terms of the key points for thinking about if we are looking to engage and embed these sorts of systems in institutional practices. And then those three points, I think, are quite vital there to ensure that. So lastly, just a few observations or conclusions that we are starting to piece together from the outputs of the programme. And this work will come together in a publication which would be published towards the end of this year. But we do recognise that there are great challenges to the development and integration of design for learning tools. There is the complexity, diversity of existing approaches to design. I think the diversity and rapid change in the educational tools that may be deployed in the curriculum. And also in the range of institutional systems, standards and processes that are potentially involved in design. And here in particular, in the next 4 years, we are funding two very large programmes of work around curriculum design and delivery so that we can start working with institutions over a longer period of time to actually look at the institutional processes involved and be able to look at the variety of roles involved in those processes as well. Staff time and motivation, as we know, is always a factor. And I think also cultural resistance to sharing designs and resources and helpful QA processes and perceptions of design tools is controlling quality rather than enabling innovation. Curriculum documentation, the rise of learner-owned technologies along with learners' use of Web 2 technologies and participation in their own social networks and content sharing communities, as we've heard this morning. And a large gap really remains between standards and practice in this area. And we very much hope to take this work forward over the next 3-4 years through the new set of projects that I was mentioning earlier. So to conclude, really, we've got 101 resources now that are outputs from this programme of work that are all available through the community site that CETUS support. And those range from inspirational designs to actual learning designs and sequences, LAM sequences, for example, through to guidelines, supporting materials that have been produced for workshop staff development workshops, and those are all readily available and available for wide use and dissemination. And as I've said, we will also be collating and bringing together that in a publication towards the end of this year. So if anyone does want any information, please do feel free to get in touch with me. Thank you.